you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into Tom Curran's Patriots Talk podcast. We got a little bit of a lull in the schedule right now. We're before the OTAs and mini camps. We're after the draft. Free agency is kind of quiet. Talked to the coaches earlier this week. We fed that to you. But there's also some movement, folks. There's movement on the Patriots beat. Eric Scalavino, one of my absolute favorite people on the beat or anywhere else, has been at Patriots.com for 16 years, and he is shuffling off to God knows where. So he's going to join us
Buffalo.
Today.
Not Buffalo. I guarantee you that.
Eric joins us today and probably well overdue. Should have had him before because he's a lot of fun. What's up, my guy?
How you doing, TC?
I'm good. You heading on out?
I am. Yeah. As of tomorrow. So as of Friday this week, whenever your listeners are getting this. But Friday, May 20th. That's my
night.
Yeah. So Friday, May 20th, that's my last day. I started April 10th of 06. So it's been a full 16 years and a month plus. You know me, Tom, I've always been a guy who is interested in a lot of things. And this has been literally a dream come true to be able to work here and cover this team. So that dream having been accomplished, I figure while there's still time left on the clock, shall we say, I want to try to score a few other points elsewhere.
Yeah. Jumping to different industries. I mean, I know you love travel. You can be a travel writer. I mean, that seems like, think about it. I want to be a golf travel writer.
Yeah.
In my next final life.
That's a good way to see the world or, you know, cover the ATP, right? Cover tennis tournaments all over the world.
Thanks.
That's a great way. Well, okay, but you know, whatever's in your tea there.
From Morocco.
Yes, right. At this point, I don't, I'm taking a leap of faith is what kind of the way I've been explaining it to people, and no definitive landing point at this stage. So I'm open to a lot of different things. So yeah, I could stay in journalism. I could move out of it. I could get into any of the other different things that I like, my animal welfare causes, the arts, back into TV production, which is kind of radio and TV where I started my career a long time ago. There are a lot of things that are possible right now. It's just a matter of what the good Lord wants me to do next.
All right. And I know you're a faith-based guy, so I'm sure that will be something that will be prominent in all. So we send up the prayers for our guy.
Thank you.
Everything goes perfectly for you. I'm sure it will because, got a good way about you. There's no such thing as perfect anyway.
That's right.
What was the single best day on the beat for you?
I mean, it would have to be Super Bowl 49 in Arizona when they beat Seattle in the most unbelievable of ways. And I say that because it was the first Super Bowl I got to experience as a member of the organization. And it came on the heels of two absolutely heartbreaking defeats to the Giants on a couple of fluky plays. And I'm sitting there in what's now called, I think, State Farm Stadium, right? It was University of Phoenix back then.
Yep.
Sitting there in the press box, and the Seahawks are coming toward us in that end zone. And the pass from Wilson to, was it Javon Curse? No, not Javon Curse, but
no.
The Curse was the wide receiver, right? I believe.
Lockett. Yeah. No.
Yeah. Lockett Curse was the guy on the goal line that got the pass picked off. And then Curse was the one who had that jumbling catch on the sideline. And Malcolm Butler makes the tackle, or else he gets up and runs in the end zone. And so I'm sitting there in the press box thinking, I'm going to experience another loss in the Super Bowl working for this team by some fluky, ridiculous catch. You got to be kidding me. I was slumped down in my chair in the press box thinking, this can't be happening. This cannot be happening. And then all of a sudden, Malcolm Butler makes that pick. And I'm like, I grabbed the arm of my boss, Fred Kirsch. I'm like, we were speechless. We couldn't believe
it. Did you process it in the exact moment? Because it took me probably, I would say, a second and a half, 2 seconds. Because we're looking down on it, right? Were
right.
You at the
yeah.
same level I was?
Yeah. Yeah.
Were you in the end zone?
I was in the corner. Yeah, I was in the corner of the end zone. So I got to see.
I didn't have the press box. I think
you were in the aux press. Were you in the aux?
Yes, I was.
So you were a little bit higher up probably than I was.
Yeah.
But I was in the corner of that end zone. So I got to see it on an angle, basically. Great view of it. I saw the whole thing, but
yeah, I was
just
looking straight down. They were like little ants. And then I saw it. And then boom, like there was a monitor. My eyes shot to the monitor and I'm like.
It was, it left me speechless. I couldn't believe what I was seeing and realizing, oh my God, they're actually going to win this game. You know, then there was a little bit of turmoil at the end, a little fisticuffs with Gronk and some of the defensive players there who were getting a little zealous trying, you know, when Brady's trying to kneel down on it. But that wasn't going to spoil anything. The fact that they were going to win and it like as Brady's kneeling down, I'm thinking, oh my God, they're actually going to win. I'm thinking, I'm going to get to go to the White House now, which is something I've always wanted to do. You know, we're going to get rings as members of the organization. This is unbelievable. This is unbelievable. And the moment that it really hit me, Tom, was, you know, right afterwards, it's mayhem because, you know, we have to go down. We have to get interviews down in that big, you know, that staging area where they've got all the podiums.
It's like
a
massive warehouse. Yeah, folks, and there's podiums all set up around.
So you got to go grab your interviews. Excuse me, catch as catch can. You know, you're kind of bouncing around getting stuff. So the next half hour, 40 minutes, I'm gathering all my interviews for my post-game story that I've got to write. And then the plan for our group was we had to, you know, we all did our separate things and then we all had to converge back in the parking lot at the van, the little minivan that we took to get there, to get back to our hotel. And so I'm trying to find my way out of the stadium there. And, you know, it's not familiar to me. I haven't only been there once or twice. So I find myself in like a deserted staircase that eventually leads me outside, but I'm all alone in this empty, like cinder block staircase. There's nobody else around. Fans have already left. The game is well over. It's over like an hour after the game has ended. I'm all alone in there. And I'm thinking, I just sat down for a second on the stairs and I was like, God, thank you so much for this. Cause I mean, I, as a fan growing up, I thought Vinatieri's kick in Super Bowl 36 was the one and only time in my life I would see the Patriots win a Super Bowl, right? So I was ecstatic about that game. But to be a part of the organization and to know that I was going to experience the wonderful fruits of the victory throughout the offseason just left me so full of gratitude. I just sat there for a minute, let it soak in that, wow, there was nobody else around, just me. And it was the perfect time to just sit there and give thanks for what had just happened and what I was about to experience. And then I made my way out to the parking lot. I did finally. Yeah. I did find it, but it was late. It was dark out there. I had to stumble around, but that I would say would be my most memorable day on the beat was that first Super Bowl win.
How would you describe covering the team as a member of the organization? I've always thought that, for as much as, you know, on 98.5, call it sunshine.com. And there was a guy, Ed Duckworth from the Providence Journal. You remember Ed?
Yeah.
He's the one who coined that, sunshine.com.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And look, I remember Kevin Mannix used to refer to it as the house organ. But all that said, I've always thought you guys had a fair amount of latitude to say and do things.
Yes.
There are lines, though. Have there been lines?
I mean, we kind of know the things we can say and can't say, obviously. Yeah. And also we've talked about certain things, you know, as a group, as our little Patriots Unfiltered, formerly PFW group. You know, we know that we're not allowed to break news. We see and are privy to a lot of things that you guys find out about after the fact, but we're not allowed to divulge those things beforehand because of our, you know, the privileged status we have being literally in the building. But I've always found it, your question is a great one, because I've always found it as a sort of purgatory, because like you said, those of you on the beat, for the most part, look at us and think, oh, they're all just, you know, rose-colored wearing, panacea, everything's great all the time. And the folks on the outside, you know, we try so hard to be objective, because right. it's the only way we'll be taken seriously by anybody. Because, you know, if you guys in the media hear us, you know, enumerating all the things that are wrong with this roster year in and year out, you say, oh, wow, those guys are actually being pretty, you know, pretty right down the middle with this. And you'd be stunned, Tom, I think, to hear a lot of the fans that listen to us are mad at us for being so negative all the time about this team, because we're being objective. We're pointing out flaws. You know, we see it warts and all. And it's the only way we could be taken seriously would be to call balls and strikes as we see them. And there's no other way I'd want to do it, Tom, honestly, because I don't want to be known as a house organ, or, you know, I'm not a member of the PR department here. It's not my job to say everything's great all the time. That's, you know, at heart, I'd like to think of myself as a journalist. That's where I spent most of my career. And journalists only should have one agenda, and that's to tell the truth. And thankfully, we have had the luxury of working in a place that has given us that latitude. They've told us from above, we don't want you telling it, you know, like that everything's great all the time. Tell it how you see it. And we want you to do that. So I've been grateful for that too.
And you always, not always, people often have a view of their own. They see themselves differently than people from the outside do. I think that if you polled us as a media group, we look at you as colleagues. We don't look at you as a different entity, even though you work for Patriots.com and there's a Robert Kraft's name is at the bottom of your check, I'm presuming, or somebody involved with mm-hmm. Kraft's, it comes from mm-hmm. Kraft Sports.
Yep.
I don't feel, I've never really felt as if you guys were in anyone's pocket, even though the money that paid you came from someone's pocket. Mm-hmm. Do you attribute a lot of that to Jonathan Kraft, the ability to have that latitude to do things?
Yeah,
and give a product that can be critical.
I think you've pointed that out accurately, because you know we go to the annual meeting every year, whether it's in Florida or Arizona, you know, and Jonathan is on the one of those subcommittees that specifically deals with, like, you know, in-house media and those kind of things. And yeah, I mean, he's, like I said, we've had discussions internally about what we can and can't say. We've got that unwritten but understood rule about not breaking news. But other than that, we have free rein, really. I mean, you know, we've said critical things about the head coach, about the quarterback who used to be here, about the current quarterback, about any number of players throughout the years. We, you know, when they've played poorly in stretches or individual games, we've called them out for it. And I think our fans, our listeners, our audience deserves that, because if they really want to understand their team, you know, look, fans are passionate.
It's and that's like, the thing is, not everybody wants to understand the team to the extent that we are all able to plumb the depth of what, you know, the general fan of the Patriots, the very general couch fan, Sunday fan, would turn on NBC Sports Boston and say, okay, day five of no coaching titles, crisis in Foxborough. What are we doing? I mean, is there anything else? And that's actually a conversation we're having today to show you how the sausage gets made. You know, Greg Bedard from Boston Sports Journal had a comment on his podcast that there are rumblings already that things aren't going well and players aren't happy with the setup. And, you know, we're bandying about whether we're going to talk about that. My take is we've kind of relentlessly touched on what we perceive to be the shortcomings of the coaching staff, relentlessly, whether it be Joe Judge or Matt Patricia, or the outflow of guys or no defensive coordinator. They're in OTAs. They got mini camps coming up. We're in a little bit of lag time here. we've made our point.
So you don't want to belabor it is what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's okay to belabor because that's what we do. And we oftentimes say, look, we're media. We have new people coming in. We have new ears coming in. It's not always the same people, but I think the point's been made so often that if we're intimating that players are unhappy, we also have to say, how can they be unhappy with anything concrete? They might be expressing doubt that this whole thing's going to work. We're saying, boy, Joe was here a few years ago, and I'm not sure he was awesome at what he did, or I don't know how much he knows about offense, but it's really hard to have a smoking gun as to why they suck. We presume that they're going to be challenged, but I think we're starting to hammer it. And I've gotten that feedback online, and I'm starting to scrutinize it. I'm sitting down to write, and I'm like, ah, I gotta find some kind of way to make, I've made the points. The points have been made.
Yeah. And you want to give them a chance. You want to give them a chance, right? To either prove it or not prove it. Yeah.
Yeah. If I see guys walking away from Joe Judge or Matt Patricia and Joe are both screaming at the same time in one in Mac Jones's ear hole, I'm gonna be able to say it doesn't look like it's going awesome.
Right.
But what's your appraisal of the Boston media and the negativity? What's it tied to? Is it tied to our general, what we perceive fans to want, what we end up having because we become jaded over the years, what the Patriots' success demands from us? What is it? Or are we just being fair and balanced?
Well, I think part of it is the 24-hour news cycle. It also applies to sports talk, right? And sports TV, which we have as passionate a fan base for sports in the New England region as there is in any part of this country. And, you know, probably rivaling some of the big European soccer clubs across the ocean. So I think there's a demand. There's never not a demand for people who want to talk about these kind of things.
Right.
So I think there's constantly, I think sometimes we overestimate maybe how many people haven't heard what we've talked about. And so we feel like we have to keep talking about it because somebody might not have heard about it and somebody might want to contribute. And, you know, to the conversation, whether it's, you know, so-and-so from Cape Cod who calls in or a fellow colleague who hasn't given his take yet, or we talk [S2] Right. [S1] About a column or somebody who said something, we want to saturate the conversation until we get to an answer. Because I think we're always searching for an answer, especially with this team, which is so guarded with any information of any kind that is even the most innocuous. Like, who's coaching special teams? Cam Acord couldn't even tell us that the other day. He's been the special teams assistant and special teams coach the last few years. Obviously, he's going to coach special teams. Why not just say it? What competitive advantage does it give him not to say that he's coaching special teams? You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. So, I mean, the effort expended...
Yeah.
On these trivial matters makes me say, okay, eyes on the prize. Mm-hmm. There's no competitive advantage to not doing, to not announcing. So why are you spending time worrying about that?
Right. Why not
talking to your coaches and telling your coaches, look, you guys are all titleless widgets who we're just going to call you. I mean, come on. That's what these guys are in the industry to do. Mm-hmm. Maybe someday become half of the head coach that Bill Belichick is, a quarter, but to advance in their careers. And you don't just do that by osmosis, despite the fact so many Patriots coaches and personnel folks have moved on. They have to fight for their titles and they have to fight for their reputations and to withhold those. Oh, everybody in the league knows. Do they? Do they really?
Mm-hmm.
Because I hear guys go to interviews and they come out of the interviews and like, we didn't talk about anything that has to do with football. We're talking about the setup there and who did what and who does what. And, you know, why are you going to be different than the other guy? It does not put them at an advantage to advance in their careers.
Right.
Which would breed a little bit of agitation, I would imagine, with those employees.
Mm-hmm. Sorry. I think that's fine. It's your show. I'm just here to.
Yeah, but I'm interrupting. I want an exchange of ideas, not a.
No, that's okay. I mean, your earlier point about why do we keep talking about this subject? I think it's because there is so much uncertainty around it. It's bad enough that there's uncertainty at various positions. on this roster, which in a normal offseason is more than enough to talk about.
Right.
Why do we have to, you know, exacerbate the problem by having the coaching staff be part of the uncertainty? That's usually the thing that you could count on throughout the 20 years of success that they've had prior was, you know, Bill at the top, the same offensive system, roughly the same defensive system, and the continuity, the experienced coaches on the staff. You didn't have to worry about that. You could always fall back on, well, they're well coached, right? You could always fall back on that, at least. This offseason feels like, well, do we know who's coaching? Like, it's okay. I'm okay with if they don't want to tell us on the outside who's coaching what position. Fine. We'll figure that out when OTAs right. and training camp get here. We'll see who's working with what position. Fine. Do the players know who's coaching what? Do the players know who's coordinating? If there's a problem on offense, do they know who to go to other than their direct position coach? Who's overseeing the whole thing? That's the thing that bothers me most is, do the players know that? Do the coaches know that? Because as much as we like to think, oh, they say they don't know, but they know. Well, maybe they don't know. Maybe Bill's holding open auditions for who the OC is going to be, who the play caller is going to be.
He's obviously holding an audition for the play caller, just judging by what Joe Judge had to say the other day. He's practicing, but Mike Reese, who I trust implicitly, was reporting, don't be surprised if it's Matt Patricia. My concern is, and I said this the other day, Joe Judge, every interaction with him that I've had has been positive. But when I when I think of an interaction with a player, there's certainly upside to Joe Judge's enthusiasm, intensity, the messages he gives. But he also, in explaining things to us, is extremely verbose and extremely fast with what he's talking about. And he jumps from one topic to another to another. And I think of that and I'm like, okay, so he's working with Mac Jones in year two and he's going to be in waterfall of words as opposed to what McDaniels was, who had done it for 20 years, and maybe Mick Lombardi. I don't know how well Mick Lombardi Hardegree
was the QB's coach. Yeah.
Okay.
Beforehand. Now he's with Josh.
Well, what I'm saying is, so you have him, you have Patricia, who's going to be the offensive coordinator, maybe the play caller, and the offensive line coach. And it's just that ambiguity for a second year quarterback that you do have to express the concern about. And the way they coach. Matt can also be a little bit wordy. So there's a lot that's going to go with this quarterback in his second year, and it's coming from perhaps, unless they're different than I've witnessed, it's coming from two guys who are very wordy for a coach whose entire raison d'être.
Oh, well pronounced.
Is keep it simple. Do your job. Here's these three things. We do these, we'll win.
Well, I'll counter that, Tom, by just saying this. In the years when Joe was here before he took the Giants job, there were a lot of times where, you know, I'd be in a scrum with the rest of you guys when we're interviewing players or coaches. And as you said, Joe, when the cameras are rolling, you know, has this very militaristic, like serious.
Yeah, well put.
You know, it's an austere, I guess, kind of facade that he puts out there. I've had many opportunities to interview him one-on-one over the years. And he does put on a little bit of an effect when he knows that it's official, it's camera rolling time, it's recording time. When those microphones and cameras stop, the facade goes away. And he's just literally regular Joe. And he has a completely different demeanor. His whole aspect changes, at least in the dealings I've had with him. And so if I am, I'm put myself in Mac Jones's position. I think Joe, if he's your quarterback's coach, would be dealing with Mac differently than he deals with us as media members. So I take a little bit of optimism in my history with Joe and even with Matt Patricia, same kind of way that they are different people when they're not talking to the media. And I think that gives me hope for their roles going forward, whatever those roles are going to be.
And I think, you know, as I wrote in a story yesterday, it's time to turn off the negativity spigot for a little while and try and say, okay, well, how can this work a little bit? And I looked at the defensive side of the ball here, and said, okay, they've fumigated the entire linebacker group and they're obviously changing things, but, and they lost JC Jackson and Van Noy was their most productive linebacker and Hightower was their smartest one. And those guys are gone. But now, hey, what time do you have to go?
You asking me?
Yeah.
Oh, we got a little bit of time. I'll let you know. I'll let you know. I'll give you the signal when it's time to go.
So I'm looking at that and I'm saying to myself, okay. So on offense, we have coaching uncertainty, but on defense, even though there's not a named coordinator, we have an embarrassed coaching staff over there that witnessed what happened. Yep. And at least they're making the progress by saying, we can't run around with 255-pound linebackers anymore who are in their 30s. We got to get faster. We got to get more hybrid safeties, and we got to be able to zip around. Mm-hmm. So that's a positive. The coaching staff, despite the uncertainty, that can be a positive too. But it's funny, we have so many X factors on the defensive side of the ball in terms of, I don't know how Raekwon McMillan and Terrence Mitchell, Mac Wilson, just a collection of guys. Cam McGrone, I mean, shit, we might be buying, you know, Cam McGrone jerseys in a few months, but especially listening to Steve Belichick speak so effusively about him. And I hope that's good. You watch his clips, he looks really good. But we don't know about that group. There, however, I put more trust in the defensive coaches, despite not having as much faith in the defensive personnel right now. Agreed?
I guess you have at least consistency in Mayo's been there now a few years. Steve's been there a few years. You kind of know that they're sort of a tandem crew, if you will, at the DC position. So at least you've got that consistency. I think the players probably understand what the dynamic is with those two. Mm-hmm. It might be a little bit more confusing on offense where you have two former NFL head coaches who are now assistants who are seemingly vying for, the most glamorous assistant coaching position on that side of the ball, the offensive coordinator. So is that going to cause friction? Are they going to be able to work together since they have worked together already on this staff in the past, or, you know, are the egos going to get in the way? I think there are a lot of questions that are valid and should be asked at this point because we're not given any answers to them. You know, every time we try to ask them, we get told, oh, I don't know, I don't care, whatever they tell me to do. And, you know, maybe that's true, but also maybe that's a little sign of frustration from some.
Oh, it's frustrating.
Who want to know, who want to be told, who want to be able to speak freely.
Who also may feel like, what are we doing? You know, right. Now I have to, not only do I have to be told by the head coach what I'm supposed to say when I sit down for an interview, now I have to sit there on back-to-back days and act like Mickey the Dunce and shrug my shoulders. Well,
right.
It's a waste of their time. It's a waste of our time. And it's very easily solvable.
And you can put up with it, Tom, for as long as you're winning, right? You specifically, and you, the general, you can put up with that kind of stuff. If, well, okay, but they go to the AFC Championship and the Super Bowl every year. They win it every other year. Okay, we can deal with that. But when you have a losing record, when you get spanked in the playoffs, when you start having, you know, a run of unsuccessful years, now it starts to get a little. More than frustrating, right? It starts to become intolerable. And you're like, well, what is he doing? What's the whole point of this?
And again, it's funny because you look at the 2018 season and that is a PlayStation reset game button that they got handed in many ways. Mm-hmm. And they went 11-5 in that regular season. They lost every single game to non-playoff performers. Lions, Jaguars, Titans. None of those teams made the playoffs. That was not a great team. They rebooted. They win a Super Bowl because, in large part, because of perfect health on that team. Mm-hmm. But we go back, we only go back as far as 18 because they won a Super Bowl that year. But that was not a year that was trending well.
No, especially with the two losses in December, back-to-back.
It really goes back to... It really goes back to the Eagles Super Bowl. So it's really from January of 2018.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we all reported on how things were going in the 2017 season. where there were so many guys who were disenfranchised and disenchanted on the coaching staff, the personnel group, players themselves, obviously, with Brady. But it's going on for a while. The 2018 was, yeah, it bought more time, and we don't go back that far. Well, to come down from the pinnacle of professional sports does take a little bit of time, and there are rungs to go on. I'm not saying they're way down here.
Right.
There, but the rungs are, they're much more close to the middle of things.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Are the Patriots a well-coached team?
At the moment, you're asking me?
Yeah, I mean, I saw a lot of symptoms in 2021 that would make me say, boy, I get burned timeouts and penalties. You get not enough guys on the field. You get too many guys on the field. You get breakdowns, timeouts wasted.
It's a tough question to answer, because is it bad coaching or is it bad talent? You know? Like, are the coaches telling them this is what you got to do, but the guys aren't good enough to do it? Or is it the players are good enough to do what they're told, but there's confusion about what they're being told? I don't know. I honestly don't know what the correct answer is. My gut tells me it's a little bit of both.
I look at that loss to Buffalo, for instance, where we saw, all right, Trent Brown takes a penalty for hopping up and down. David Andrews takes a penalty for scurrying downfield and getting in somebody's face. And there's plenty of fans who are like, oh, that's what you're supposed to do. It's not hockey.
Right.
You know, you're going to get 15 yards. You're playing a division rival. You saw N'Keal Harry with a drop, and on the next play. So it's hitting discipline, leadership, player development, attentiveness. And no, those are the guys on the field. But if the players on the field don't know enough to not, I don't know.
I think it falls somewhere in the middle, Tom, honestly. There are a lot of younger, less experienced coaches on this staff now than there were 10 years ago. There are a lot fewer high talent players on this roster than there were 10 years ago. I think it's fair to say both of those things. So, and the rest of the league, by the way, has been moving steadily, especially in this conference, in the AFC, as we saw this famously this offseason during the free agent signing period in March. Teams are being aggressive. Teams aren't sitting pat. Pardon the pun. They understand that it's to use the phrase that was well worn, there's an arms race in the AFC, and it looks like a lot of the other teams are competing at it, and this one isn't to the degree that people would like them to. The competition level has increased. So I think when you look at that playoff game with Buffalo in particular, it was a mixture of maybe some coaching mistakes, but you could have written up the best game plan in the world, Tom. They weren't keeping up with the Bills. Speed-wise, talent-wise, it didn't matter. Buffalo had an attitude. They were at home. They felt that the pendulum had swung finally to them, and that was the game where they proved it to me, in my mind, you know, because they probably should have won the game in the wind on Monday night earlier in the season. But for a drop pass in the end zone, they probably would have won that game, despite the Patriots having a great game plan that night and executing it. And then they didn't punt for two straight games. So it didn't matter what your game plan was. You're not as good as Buffalo. And all the coaching in the world isn't going to solve that problem.
Who are the five best players under 30 on the Patriots?
Oh.
I'll do it with you. Mac Jones.
Okay, Mac Jones is one.
Kyle Duggar.
Sure. I still would like to see a little bit more out of him.
I'm with you. This is what we're going to be discussing right. A little bit is their best players are.
Mm-hmm. Kendrick Bourne, is he under 30?
Yeah, let's call him
under 30. Yeah.
Let's call him under 30.
I'll put him. People are going to yell at me for this one and say that I'm biased, but Jake Bailey, still one of the best in the game. He had an injury last year that I think contributed to some of his foibles.
We can't
relatively for him.
Hmm? I mean, it's hard. Damian Harris, we would kind of say. Nobody at the cornerback position that we can say. Adrian Phillips, if he's under 30, he goes. He's in.
He might just be right on the border there.
Judon.
He's been in the league for a while. Judon, yeah, that's a good one.
And Barmore. That's
a good one. Judon, Barmore, yeah.
Judon, Barmore, Jones.
Mac Jones, Bourne.
Let's get Bailey out of there.
Okay. Always comes down to disrespecting the kickers. I get it. It's fine.
I have a question here for you after this. It'll be the last one.
I know. I'm teasing you. I'm teasing you. Ramondre Stevenson?
Yeah. Mike Onwenu? I mean, that's the hard thing. I guess that's the point I'm trying to make is.
Yeah. Yeah. In the old days, you could have listed those easily, right?
Myers mm-hmm. might fit too. But when we look at the profile of those players, if it's Jacoby Myers, it's an undrafted guy. If it's Mike Onwenu, it's a sixth round guy.
Ramondre
Stevenson, yeah. Fourth, third.
I think
Harris, fourth. Third.
Yeah. Yeah.
Duggar, excellent second round pick. Barmore, mm-hmm.
Yep.
Second round pick. Jones. But it's just, it's an underwhelming. You need not, those guys aren't underwhelming in and of themselves. It's an underwhelming
foundation.
If you pull up to that house and say, you know who they have in there?
Right.
Who? These guys.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Those are the best players. Those mm-hmm. are good players. Those are the best ones. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think if you do that exercise with Buffalo, Kansas City, Cincinnati, LA, Chargers, Houston, Tennessee, Baltimore, you probably are quicker to name those five, probably, right?
Yeah.
And, that's your competition. You know, that's the competition you're looking up to, right?
Miami as well, I would think.
Miami too, yeah. That's can't forget them. They've beaten you three out of the last four, right?
Who was your favorite interview in the locker room?
Of all time?
16 years, yeah.
Good Lord. That's a tough one because there have been quite a few.
All right, well, let's do this.
I mean, Matthew Slater's one of them.
Can you?
He's got to be up there. He's got to be up there.
Can you do your Matthew Slater?
I don't really know if this is the time or the place, Tom, but we'll do our best to do him justice as he so deserves.
How'd you like?
I love him. I love Matthew Slater.
Of course you do.
He's one of my favorite all-time Patriots.
Did you enjoy interviewing Wes Welker?
Yeah, no. I mean, there were times when he was good and gave good answers and said nice things and different things like that. But yeah, I mean, sure. Just catching the ball from Tom and now I'm coaching with the Dolphins where I used to play and.
How much
did you do? That?
That was absolutely perfect. Is that your best one?
I think Slater probably would be my
Phil
best
does
one.
Phil does an incredible Slater.
Phil does. I didn't know he did the impressions.
You know who did a great Belichick was Kevin Duffy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Where's he now?
Physical therapy. He's a physical therapist, PT guy.
He's completely out of the biz.
Now, yeah. Right? So check into that. He seems to be cashing checks. So.
Yeah.
Do you have a Belichick?
No, I mean, who doesn't have a Belichick? I don't know how you rank the impressions, but you don't.
I mean, it's more for you to do than me. Yeah. I mean, I would, whatever.
Ask the geniuses at the league about that, Tom.
Write them up.
Okay.
You don't have a Brady, do you?
Thanks, guys.
Phil, I think, also does a James White.
Oh, the little giggle that he's got?
How's that, yeah. That laugh?
Yeah, a little giggle.
Yeah. Vrabel, you can't do a Vrabel. You weren't around him long enough.
I was around him, but...
Wow.
That was how he started every answer with, well, I mean, you know, every answer. Answer was that.
Brewski was two times with everything.
Two times, yeah. Another favorite of mine, Tommy, was Logan Mankins. You remember him, right? He was always a good guy. I liked him. Win or lose, he'll talk to you afterwards. Doesn't matter.
Stand-up guy.
Yeah, very stand-up guy. I love him.
We got any others?
Oh, I'm sure. There have been Vince. Some. Point blank.
Patriots Hall of Famer Vince Wilfork.
Point blank. Yeah. That was his go-to catchphrase, was point blank. So
point blank.
There have been so many. Like Randy Moss was a good one back in the day. Like when I used to hear his voice all the time. It's funny because when you at least for me, when you hear a voice in your head, you either know right away whether you can do it or not. I don't know how that's possible, but it is. Like I had never done Matthew Slater before, and your old colleague Mary Paoletti asked me one day, "Can you do Matthew Slater impression?" And it just came right off the top. And I just, because I knew I'd heard him so many times, I'm like, yeah, I can do that voice. I know that voice. But then there are other ones where I hear them and I know I just cannot. So I don't even attempt them. It's weird.
No, I appreciate that.
I can't explain it, you know? Can't explain exactly how I know, but just do.
Boy, so no Stephon Gilmore, Malcolm Butler. We would have to hear these guys again.
Well, Steph, you literally would have to hear Steph. He was always whispering. So I don't know what his voice sounded like. Even I would stand next to him and I couldn't hear him.
How about Dev? I bet you could do Dev if you heard him for a second.
Oh, McCourty?
Yeah. It's very monotone. And a little bit.
Working, trying hard with the secondary and the coaching staff. Yeah, that's why I have to hear more a little bit.
Yeah, you'd have to hear more, but you were on the right track there.
But you know, it's tough not having been in the locker room.
Before you leave,
I'm gonna filibuster through that question, Tom.
Robert Kraft before you leave.
Not having been in the locker room because of the restrictions the last couple of years.
I understand you're moving on, but you've been terrific. All of you have been terrific. You've been of unfair at times to me, but we love to give you the latitude to be assholes if you need to be.
I've never heard him use that language, Tom. That's unfair.
I know, I'm joking. I really enjoy him. I think he's a good guy. All that said, I love my Robert Kraft impression. Can you do it, Jonathan?
It's not bad. I've never really tried, no. And that's one of those where I hear the voice in the head and I know that it's not possible for my vocal range.
All right, you're going to have to bleep this, John Henry. Felger, we spend. We spend plenty of money.
Not bad, Tom.
Thanks.
Not bad.
And I've never seen anyone do an impression of me. The impression that you did of me was more body language.
Yeah, right. Less voice, more body language.
More mannerisms.
And I have to be able to walk around to do it. So it's not going to
I do a good Belichick walk.
I have seen that, and you do. I can vouch for that.
Do a Mike Petralia walk?
they're a little similar. Those two are a little bit similar in the walk.
Speedier. I'm a good walking impersonator.
Yeah. Well, Mike was always, you know, in a hurry to get the
sound. I could probably do a Paul Perilla walk too, because there's a little bit of a waddle and a roll to it. All right.
He's gonna love hearing that, Tom. He's gonna love hearing that.
Can you do a Paul Perilla impersonation?
No.
Yes, you can.
Not really. No. I can't. His voice is different than mine.
He's not pitchy. All right. We've gone far enough.
Okay.
Everybody, I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you people who have followed Eric Scalavino, and I know there are many, many devoted Patriots fans who have listened to Eric Scalavino and followed him and read him through the years. Wonderful person. Really happy to call him a friend. And I hope this is not see you later, because I think it'd be fun to have on the beat on the pod here and there as we go forward. now that you're untethered.
Hey, anytime you want.
What did he say? Didn't he used to work for us?
Anytime you want to talk about road trips, Tom, that's my forte. So any NFL road trip talk, I'm there for you. Just give me all a right. call.
Eric, thank you, man.
All right, Tommy. Pleasure.
Wait a minute, folks. We're back. I think we got Randy Moss. Randy Moss is joining the program.
Yo, three questions, y'all. Start it off.
That's enough. Bye, everybody.